This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 86 of What's It Like. My guest is Pat Flynn, somewhere in San Diego?
San Diego, California.
Oh, did you grow up there?
No, actually, well, sort of. I was born on the East Coast in Connecticut, actually. A lot of people don't know that. But I came to San Diego when I was about six and was there until I went to college and came back after college.
Oh. So did you come from a large family?
No, very, very small family. Just my mom, my dad, and me.
Oh. Why did your family transmigrate to California?
Well, my dad was working at a Naval Ocean Systems Center in Connecticut. In Groton, Connecticut, I believe. And then it shut down and we had two choices to go either to San Diego or Florida. So we're like, okay, maybe 72 degree weather all year round in San Diego or really hot and sticky and then hurricanes in Florida. So I guess we chose San Diego for that reason.
Doesn't sound that bad, huh? When you were growing up, who had the biggest influence in your life?
Probably both my parents, but more my dad. My mom was, and my mom too. It's hard to pick one over the other, but my parents, I guess you could say, they were very generous and kind, and were always going the extra mile and over delivering in their relationship toward me and toward other people. So I would see them as being good examples of how to really connect with people and build friendships and relationships that can really make everybody around us happy. So those are the big influences. I also had a couple teachers growing up as well. You know, obviously, you know, all of us when we grow up, we there are standout teachers that you know, when someone asks, well, who's your favorite teacher? There's a couple that you can always immediately point out. One of them, his name was Mr. Ford. He was a math teacher and he was great. And the reason I loved him a lot was because he was extremely strict, but in a good way, in a way because he really wanted us to succeed. And you can tell it wasn't just he was an angry mean, but he was really, really wanting us to succeed. And that stood out to me. And so that was actually a really good class. And then another one was back in, there's so many. Mrs. Tannenbaum, she was my AP bio teacher. And she was just so friendly, always had a smile on her face. And that just made coming to class for this insane class with crazy information. It just made it so much easier to consume that content that she was giving us, and it really made a difference. So I think, again, it just comes down to people and how you relate to it. I mean, that's something I've learned throughout my whole life is just you know, how you connect with other people can really affect your life and your happiness.
Mm-hmm. What was your major challenge as a child?
My major challenge as a child, I was a tiny, 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 tiny boy. I was always a small kid. My dad likes to joke around because I was in the marching band. For example, freshman year of high school, I was in the marching band, and it was really easy to find me on the field. It was just, you know, the really tall people all around me, you know, who were just average height, but you can. It was really easy to find me, especially because I had a trumpet that was about the same size as me. So I was really small. So that led to a lot of things like, you know, low self-esteem at times and a lot of people bullying me and joking around about me and my height and stuff. And, you know, as much as I want to say it didn't affect me, it did. Mm-hmm. And it just made me feel kind of, you know, out of control. Like I didn't get out of control, but as far as like, I couldn't control my height. There was nothing I could do about
No.
it. You know, I platform shoes for kids would just make things worse. And, you know, I just learned that, you know, that it's not my fault that people are saying that. It's something internally that's going on with them that's making them say that. And I, you know, it's different for every person, but I learned not to feel bad when someone says that, because why would somebody say that? It's to put someone down, and you know, if you go deeper, like, what are the reasons why someone is putting someone else down? Because usually something else is going on in that person's head. So I mean, that's what I've learned. Obviously, when I was in school, I didn't know all that stuff, and it was just stuff I learned as I became an adult. And now that I have a son of my own, I'm really thinking hard about those types of things, and worried and excited and interested in seeing how he grows up in that school and environment like that. Because I was a small kid, my wife is 4'11", so chances are he's going to be a tiny kid as well. So I don't want him to go through the experiences that I have. Although I will say that I believe I'm a stronger person as a result, and it's helped me realize to treat people with respect no matter who they are, what they look like, and what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that people pick on others for things that can't be changed.
Yeah, it's really sad actually.
You'd think they would pick something that people could change. You know, I hate the way you do this rather than I hate the way you look. You know.
Yeah.
So what was school like for you?
It was all about grades for me. That was something that came from my dad. You know, I would come home from school with an A minus, you know, a 96% on a, or like a 92% on a paper or something, and then he would say, "Well, what happened to the other 8%?" Or what, you know, that type of thing. So he was really pushing me, and I appreciate it. I think there, you know, sometimes it was done in a respectful manner. Sometimes I feel it was kind of pushing me in a way that I wasn't really being accepted toward, but. It was really all about getting the best grades as possible. And it was a competition for me. I would compete against other students. I was always in the top of my class and trying to compete with the other guys in the top of the class and just trying to get the best grades and, you know, down to trying to be the first one to turn in an exam and be the first one up just to, you know, to be like, hey, I was done first. And, you know, I don't know why it's like that. Maybe it has to do with my parents. And I know that myself, I'm a very competitive person in all aspects of life and in school, in sports. I participate in a ton of sports, or at least I used to before I got married. But that's a whole different podcast episode. Even in business, I think of it as a competition, not just with other people, actually less so than with other people than with myself. So I like to keep track of where I'm at and try to beat myself as far as the numbers and the bottom line and in my performance. Trying always to progress.
So you graduated from high school and you went on to college?
I did. I applied to only four schools here. I was in San Diego. I applied to four schools, UC San Diego, UC Santa Barbara, UCLA, and UC Berkeley. I was very fortunate to be accepted to all of them. So my choice for which one to choose, my selection process was based on which school is furthest away from home. So I went I went to UC Berkeley, and that was also a decision that my dad and I made together. He's like, because he went to college like right next to where he used to live in New York. And he said that, you know, he felt like he missed out on the college kind of atmosphere. And he really wanted me to experience that and get out of the house. And maybe that was just a nice way of, you know, I'm tired of you. I need a break for a little bit. But I went to UC Berkeley, and it was a great experience. I studied architecture. I was in the marching band. I was a big marching band freak. And I actually ended up staying for 5 years. I could have graduated in four, but I ended up taking an extra course, just one course, my fifth year, so that I can stay in the band. I was that dedicated to the band, and you know, it sounds funny, but you know, my fourth year, my senior year in college, I tried out for the executive committee in the marching band. It's like it's one of the only student-run marching bands in the nation, and I lost by two votes to become student director. So one person, if one person changed their vote, it would have affected the. So I was really sad about that. And, you know, my freshman year, I was first chair. I was like the top freshman. Second year, I was the section leader. Third year, I was on the committee underneath the executive committee. Fourth year, I was supposed to be the student director, but it didn't happen. So then, a lot of people were like, oh, I can't believe this. It's too bad. But I really, really wanted it. And I knew it was something that I would regret if I didn't really try to get it. So I decided to stay another year. I took another landscape architect course and a drawing course and stay in the band. And I won by a landslide that fifth year. And I just had an amazing time. And I actually did a lot of things for the band that were never done in the past before to help them and really kind of carve the path for them in their future. So it was really good and a great experience. You know, just the brotherhood and camaraderie with the other bandmates and was amazing, and lifelong friendships were created there. So you know, that was really my college experience.
So did you always want to be an architect?
No, actually, and it's funny. I heard, and this is really I don't know if this is smart of me or stupid of me or whatever. But when I was in high school, everybody was applying for chemistry or bio or all, you know, there was a ton of people applying for those. This kind of science majors, and I really, really wanted to get in there, to at least get accepted to all the schools. So I applied, at least for Berkeley, to architecture because only a couple of people were. I heard it was a less competitive major, and it was something I was interested. You know, I was born, and then I played with Legos when I was little, and I really enjoyed that, and you know, Lincoln Logs and that whole thing. So it was really interesting to me, and you know, I knew, my dad always pointed out that I was half decent at drawing. So I decided to try architecture, give it a shot. I knew that if it wasn't for me, if I took the first kind of semester of classes and it just didn't fly with how I felt, then I could switch really easily. So, but I took a couple classes. I really, really enjoyed it. I got really excited and I stuck with it. It's a very, very difficult major as a college student because you're living in your studio most of the time. Once you get into those studio courses where you're building models and you have projects, you know, you can never be done with a project. You can always do more. So the kind of mentality is just to keep going and keep going and keep going until pretty much your kind of jury review is what they call it when you have a project, and then you have other architects, real architects, come in and kind of judge your work and your presentation. So that was my lifestyle for a while. It was a semester of marching band and a semester of living in studio. You know, I literally had a sleeping bag in studio to sleep in and a refrigerator. So I didn't know I always wanted to be an architect, but once I started to get into kind of the education behind it, I was really enjoying it. And I knew that I wanted to spend the rest of my life in that field.
Did you have internships?
Not in college, unfortunately. You know, me personally, I didn't have time. I knew some people who did, and it probably would have been a smart thing to do. The tough part about it, at least for UC Berkeley, was they're very traditional in their architecture program. They do everything hand-drawn. So all the, at least when I was there, everything was hand-drawn. There was no AutoCAD or computer work done. And so when you were looking for an internship, or even afterwards when I graduated, when I was looking for a job, it was very difficult to get one because you needed X number of years of AutoCAD experience, which you didn't have. But you know, I learned it. I was lucky enough to land a job in the architecture field from a relationship I had in the marching band, so I was forced to learn our AutoCAD really fast once I got there. So that was good. And the reason why I say it was good that UC Berkeley didn't go full on with the AutoCAD programs like I know Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo does. It's all computer there. Is when you draw, you experience a space that you're drawing a lot differently than if you're drawing it on the computer just using a mouse. You can actually it's hard to explain, and I don't want to get too much into it, but you can kind of feel the room you're in when you're drawing it by hand, and it's a different experience for the end user, the people who are using that building, which is the ultimate goal when you do stuff by hand and then transferred over to blueprints.
And so did you sit for the exam and become a licensed architect?
No, I did not actually. So what happened was after I graduated, you know, I said I was in the marching band and that helped me land a job through a connection of a connection of a connection. That's, you know, this is how it works. I landed a job in the architecture field at MBH Architects in Alameda, which is kind of right by San Francisco. It's a great architecture firm. I was put in the restaurant industry or kind of the restaurant kind of subdivision of that firm there. So I was actually working on restaurants for a while. So I helped draft some I did some draft work for P.F. Chang's restaurants, Yard House. Oh gosh, there was a bunch of, there's all different kinds of restaurants that we did, which was really cool and really fun. And, you know, I got to travel a little bit and go to job sites and see the drawings that we made actually built, which was an amazing experience. And then I got switched to, kind of more development projects. So I had more, drafting to do, but it was less, you know, it was more kind of overall projects and developments as opposed to just one single building. And then what happened is I got laid off, and that was interesting. And so I didn't really have a chance to end up taking the architecture exam like I was planning to. So a little bit before I got laid off, I was studying for an exam, not the architecture exam, but another one called the LEED exam, LEED, which stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. And it's about sustainable design, sustainable architecture, and green buildings and that sort of thing. And so I was taking this test to, you know, improve my resume and hopefully get you know, a promotion, stuff like that. So what I did to help me pass this exam was I used the internet. I actually created a blog to keep track of my notes because it was much easier for me to I was so much faster typing than writing out notes, and it was easy for me to organize information there. And plus, I could share that information with my coworkers to help them pass the exam too. So what I did was I did that. I passed the test, just let the site sit there. And I had this accreditation as a lead accredited professional, and things were good. I got promoted, and then, you know, three or four months later, I got laid off. And so when I got laid off, that was a really tough time for me. I didn't really know what to do. I didn't know what happened, really. It kind of all happened really fast. This was back in 2008 when the economy was really bad. And, you know, I was one of the top guys there. I was the youngest job captain to ever be promoted. And they brought me into their office and they said, "Pat, you've done excellent work here. You're one of our top guys.
Goodbye.
Yeah. I was like scratching my head. I didn't get it. So I was like, right then I was like, you know what? I thought this was like the most secure job in the world. I was pulling my weight to make sure that it was the most secure job in the world for me. And I still got booted out. I have to do something for myself and take control under my own hands. So what I did was I researched online business. And I had previously listened to a bunch of podcasts about online business and read stories and stuff like that. I didn't really know if it was true or not, or if it was really happening, or, you know, if it was all just a huge scam. So what I decided to do was just research it. So what I found out was, you know, if you have a website and you have traffic coming into that website, you could potentially make money from that traffic, from advertisements or selling them products or whatever. So I had this website up already for my lead exam site. So the first thing I did was just put some analytical tools on it to see if there was any traffic coming to the site. I knew people from my work were visiting it, but I had no idea if anyone else was. The next day, literally learned that thousands of people were visiting my site every single day to help them pass the same exam. And it kind of blew my mind. I didn't know that was happening. And at that point, I decided, okay, all these people are using my notes to pass the exam. I hope these are really good notes, or else I might get in trouble. But apparently, once I opened up the comments on the comment forms on the blog, everyone was commenting and saying how great the information was. Everyone's asking me questions like I was an expert. I didn't really consider myself an expert. I just took the exam and I knew how it worked. But in that regard, I was the expert to these people who had no idea where to start. So
as long as you're one step ahead, right?
Right, exactly. So what happened was I started to become this authority figure in this particular little niche of the lead exam. And so everyone would tell their friends about me, and, you know, I was getting ranked really high in Google search engine. And so I was just getting tons of traffic, like literally 300,000 to 400,000 people coming to my site every single month. And so, you know, at that point, I experimented with advertising. So I put what's called Google AdSense on the website, which is a little code you put on the site that automatically generates ads. And anytime someone clicks on that ad, you get some money. So I did that. And the next day I had like $5 in my account. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. I didn't do anything. And all it was just, you know, $5. I mean, out of nothing, or it seemed like nothing. But again, just mind you, it sounds like all this stuff is happening overnight, when really I had that site up for a year and a half before any of this stuff started to happen. So it does take a while. There's no such thing as get rich quick.
Probably not in any field.
You're a lotto ticket buyer or something. But even then, that's not a good business model. But anyways,
is it multiple choice? Does it have essays? What kind of format?
It's all multiple choice, all memorization based. And that's it.
So did you come up with flashcards, or what made your study materials particularly good?
It took all the fluff out, and it was just basically all the information you needed to know to pass the exam and nothing more, which is what people wanted. And what I did was, eventually after advertising, I saw that work, you know, obviously not enough to make money off of $5 a day. I joined what's called a mastermind group, a group of people who are already successful in online business, who at all different levels, who, you know, we just get together every once in a while and swap ideas with each other, help each other out. And so when it was my turn to kind of be in the hot seat, I told them what I did. One of the guys was like, "Okay, you got to write a study guide. You have all this traffic. Trust me, just write a study guide for, you know, and put your face on it, and you know, obviously make it your own. Don't copy anything from anywhere else, and sell it and see what happens." And, you know, I was pretty reluctant at first, but I said, okay, what's the worst that can happen? I don't sell any. Well, then that's fine. You know, at least I tried it. And so the first month I launched that ebook, it was an ebook, you know, so people can come to the site if they wanted to download it, or, you know, make a purchase and download it instantly. It gets delivered to them via email. So I don't even have to be there in order for a transaction to happen. And that was kind of another thing that came from the mastermind group and a decision to make everything electronic. The first month I had made $7,908.
Wow.
And it was a life.
Was that surprising
yes.
to you?
Yes. Oh my gosh, absolutely. I thought I was doing something illegal. I never had seen that much money come into my life in such a short period of time. That was more than I would make in 3 months of architecture. And then, you know, the income just started to keep, it kept growing. I was making $12,000, $14,000. I then learned about MP3 files and audio guides. So I had a professional voice talent read the guide out and sell. I sold that along with the ebook. And so, you know, at one point I was making $30,000 a month for very, very little work. And it was incredible. You know, a big influence on me at this point in time was Tim Ferriss and his book, The 4-Hour Workweek. There's a lot of interesting kind of methods and strategies to use there as far as taking yourself out of your business, not 100%, but just so that systems can run automatically without you having to be there, which is, again, for example, why I don't have a printed book. So I don't have to go to the post office and, you know, I can use the fact that people can get that book instantly as kind of a selling point or a value add. And it's just an amazing experience, everything that happened. And you know, I'm very, very fortunate that I was laid off.
So you continue to work entirely online now?
Yes, now I've been working online since the layoff. So a little over 3 years now. And things have just been doing really well. You know, that site is still up and running. It's at greenexamacademy.com. And that's still bringing in not $30,000 a month now, because there's have been some competitors and, you know, the industry's changing a little bit and it's a little less hot as it was back then. But it's still, you know, $5,000 to $8,000 a month, which is great. I also have an iPhone application business, which is another sort of passive type of income of business. You know, my buddy and I, we started a company, just had these really fun and random ideas to create iPhone apps, posted them in the App Store, and now that business is making us about $4,000 to $8,000 a month as well, which is great. I also have a couple websites that I started just from the knowledge I've learned about how to do keyword research and build websites. So I actually have the number one. This is going to sound totally random, but it's the number one security guard training website in the world.
that's close to architecture.
Yeah, right? My mom is a security guard, though, so there is a little bit of
connection
there. And that's been doing really well, about $2,000 to $3,000 a month there. I also have a blog at smartpassiveincome.com, which is kind of where you found me, Ken, and a lot of people know about me. And it's where I talk about all this stuff, all the online business stuff. And, you know, I don't sell anything on the blog, but, you know, I do make money from it by sharing my experiences and recommending products that I do earn a commission from, not to earn a commission from them, but just because that's part of what I've been using myself to create these other businesses. I give away as much information as possible. I give away as much information as possible, information that people would normally have to pay for. So I just, you know, that's kind of helping me stand out of the crowd a little bit. And I'm totally true and honest on that site, trying to make sure to, you know, not only talk about all the great things that have happened while building these online businesses and experimenting with new ones, but also the bad things that have happened, the things that one who would potentially try to do something similar, you know, tactics not to do. So just laying it all out there and being honest and just really trying to help people. And really, that's what it's all about. And whatever you do, if you're trying to start your own business, or even if you're just trying to get ahead in school or college or whatever, it's really about, you know, not only helping yourself, but helping other people as well. And I've found at least my business model has become just help as many people as possible and go out of your way. And then what happens is the universe or karma or whatever you want to call it just somehow always ends up paying you back. And it's you know, the more I put out there, the more I give away, the more it comes back. It's a really incredible thing. And I know it sounds kind of stupid to some people, but you know, I dare you to try being overly nice for a while and seeing what happens.
What's the best thing about your job?
The best thing about my job, hands down, is I get to stay here at home with my son. He's two and a half. He's almost two and a half, and I have been here every single day, except when I'm out public speaking or something for a couple days. But I was here at home when he started walking, when he started talking, when he, you know, just everything. I've been here to experience his whole life, and it really has been an amazing, amazing time. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Is there a downside to your job?
Yes, a lot of downsides. And again, this is something I'm very honest with. Working from home is not for everybody. And it's hard sometimes. The hardest part is not working. when your job's at home and you're at home all the time, you can keep working and it's hard to stop. There's always more things that you can do. And without that office that's X miles away, it's really hard to stop working. And I know the lines are being blurred now because we have all these cool cell phones and stuff that allow us to do work, you know, even work from the office wherever we're at. But at home, it's especially difficult. So, you know, there's some things that I've done to kind of help with that. So I have a separate computer, one that's just for work and one that's for kind of non-work stuff. And that's what really helped. And I make sure to turn the work computer off when I am not working, so I'm not tempted to go and work. And that's something that's, you know, a courtesy for my wife and my son too, because it's really important that, you know, not only to spend time working at home and crush it while I'm working, but also turn work off and spend time with my family and really be 100% dedicated in my head to them and not thinking about work. That was the toughest part at first.
Mm-hmm.
Another tough part was not having like coworkers to talk with. I mean, talking with you on the mic here is probably the closest I can get to actually having like water cooler talk with people. And, you know, so I've made some good friends online and I talk with them through Skype every once in a while. And we do have non-business talks because we both, you know, those people need that as well. You need to just talk to people and you can't be stuck at home all day. And I am stuck at home all day. So it's tough. It's tough. So I do try to get out. My wife and my son and I, we do go to like SeaWorld quite often, every other week, actually, just to get out of the house and put work away and set everything aside for a while.
That's a great theme park. Has a wonderful return policy for coming back again.
Mm-hmm. If you buy one ticket, you get a whole year free or something.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
it's a great place. So all of you people who don't live in Southern California, come on a visit.
Come on over. We'll hang out.
What type of person would be good at your job?
What type of person would be good at my job? Someone who's persistent. There's a lot of failures that come along with this type of job. And if you are afraid of failing, you're not going to win. I mean, this type of business is all about experimentation and trying and seeing what works and going along with that and failing and just learning from your mistakes. A lot of people I know have attempted to do online businesses and stuff like this, and they reach a stopping point or they hit a wall, and then they don't do anything to try to get around it. And they either it's the lack of passion for what, you know, sometimes people try to get into stuff that they're not really into just because they heard that it's like a money making thing. And really, you need that passion or that kind of that drive or that, at least a little bit of interest. You know, I'm not passionate about security guard training, but I am interested in it. You need that to move forward through the tough times. You also need someone who's willing to learn and always constantly learn with the online business. And as we all know, like with Facebook making all these changes and Twitter and Google Plus and all these things coming out, you got to be willing to learn and adapt. So that's really that's a big thing. And also you just got to take bold actions. You can't be afraid, like I said, to fail, but you can't you just can't be you got to get uncomfortable every once in a while. You have to step out of your comfort zone, and that's really what helps people succeed, is someone who is not afraid to take risks, calculated risks, but risks, and try something new, because there's a lot of noise out there. And so the goal is to try and grab people's attention, and the way you do that is through just being unique and being yourself and being personable, but also trying things that most people who are in the industry that you're trying to get in, or the niche that you're trying to create a blog about or create a business about, an e-commerce site about, whatever, just trying to stand out and be different.
How would one get a job like yours?
Well, it's tough because, you know, I'm in so many different platforms. So, I mean, if you wanted to do iPhone apps, I would research or take a class or something about coding. If you don't want to code, I would research outsourcing. I don't know how to code iPhone apps, and neither does my partner. We outsource everything. So we use a site like Elance.com or Odesk.com to hire people who will build those apps for us. It sounds crazy. Like you're like, well, why would people build apps for other people when they can do it for themselves? Well, that they don't do that. I mean, people in other countries who most of the people who are outsourcing to, they just want to work. They want to code, and that's all they do. They don't want to market or build anything, or they don't feel they're creative enough. So that's, you know, one route. If you want to do online business like I do, I mean, I would recommend finding a passion that you're, or something that you're interested in, or because chances are some other people are interested in that as well. And I would just get a blog up. It costs like $5 a month. That's all I started out with. And just write content that's helpful. And chances are you'll get found in Google. I mean, I could talk for days about this and the tactics involved, but I'm trying to summarize here. You just create a blog, get stuff up there, and have people find you, whether it's through social media and connecting with people there or through Google and their search engines by producing content that's relevant to what people are searching for, to guest posting on other sites. That's another tactic. And creating videos on YouTube or a podcast about that topic as well. Those are all great ways to build an audience, which then can give you that trust that you can then potentially use to, you know, sell ebooks and or whatever. I mean, there's just, the possibilities are endless. It's just really, you got to try it and kind of experiment and see what happens along the way and kind of go with the flow.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
What is a typical day like for me? Okay. So I wake up at 7:30 to the alarm clock of my son screaming in the other room. And then I take him down. My wife's still asleep at this point. So I take him down. We have breakfast together. We read a little bit. We play in the playroom. At 10:30, my wife wakes up and she comes and plays with us as well in the playroom. Then I cook lunch. And then we put him down for a nap. He's napping right now and it's after lunchtime. So this is when I can get a couple of hours of work in, which I do maybe two or three times a week. So I consider that right now me talking with you, Kenneth, because my son's asleep and my wife, I think she's taking another nap now because we're actually having our second child, which is pretty cool. So she's really tired lately. And then, you know, he wakes up from his nap. Then we do something. We go to SeaWorld or we go run errands or whatever. We just go on a walk or go to the park or something. And then we come home. We and it's great. It's amazing to go shopping or go to Target or go grocery shopping in the middle of the day because nobody's there. And you can, you know, there's no lines. Parking is really easy. And so you actually save time that way. It's pretty funny. And I'm typically like the only guy in the store. Most of them are just, most of it's women with their babies or something. And it's pretty funny. One time a week we go to Gymboree, which is kind of like a little school play thing, you know, music class for my son once a week. And I am the only guy there. So after the activities, before dinner, we come home, we have dinner. Either I or my wife cook that up, but then we hang out. We might watch something educational, like on Nick Jr. with Kaoni, like Yo Gabba Gabba or something like that. Or the Wonder Pets. I don't know if you know what those are. But and then we put him down to sleep. Then my wife and I, we hang out for a couple hours and we just watch a DVD or talk or whatever, because that's really important. And then at around 10, then that's when I start to work, actually. So I'll stay up from 10 to 1 or 2 and get all the work done I need, write a blog post or create tasks for the people who work for me because I outsource a lot of things or whatever. So that I do most of my work at night, and I found that that's when I work best. So that's why it's that way. I can do a lot more, and I'm more focused at nighttime for some reason. If I try to do all those things in the daytime, I'll take much longer, and I'll just waste time. So part of the another thing about being successful is figuring out when you work best. I mean, I know that, you know, for those of you listening, I know that, you know, when you're in class and stuff, there's certain times of the day when you're just like dead tired, and it's hard to learn. And there's other times of the day when you're just super focused and you can learn really well. So you got to kind of have to keep those in mind if you're trying to create something or be creative or build a business or even just educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So then I go to bed and the whole thing happens over again. And you know, a couple times a week, some unique things happen that I think are important. Every Thursday night, we drop off my son to grandma and grandpa's, and then we have just a date night. I think that's really important, just to stay connected and just be a couple again once time a week, because once you have a kid, that couple time kind of just disappears. And so that's basically my day and how it works, and I love it. I mean, I know this lifestyle isn't for everyone, and some of you listening might be like, that's disgusting, but you know, this really, it's just about knowing what you want in your life and going after it. And this is what I want, and so I'm not going to change it, and I'm totally happy.
Pat, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
how do I give myself a kick in the pants? It's a kind of an awkward kick, but I can make it work sometimes. There's a couple things I do. I have my mastermind group, which I talked about before. It's really important to me. I'm actually in three different mastermind groups right now. And what happens is not only do we go over, you know, what everyone's doing and try to help each other out, but we also hold each other accountable. So we say, okay, what do you want to do by next week? And then we do that so that we don't let everyone else down. And that keeps me going. And then when I feel like I'm in a down mood or something, I just go back to them and I ask for help. It's you know, one of the biggest things when you want to become successful is just having that support group. I was really fortunate when I started this online business stuff to have a very supportive wife and very supportive family. And I can only imagine what it would be like if I had any sort of negativity coming from them. It would just drain me. So being and surrounding yourself with those who will support you and who believe in what you do, and maybe it's not your immediate family or friends. And, you know, I know people who have online businesses that, you know, their friends and family don't believe in what they do. And that makes it harder. But what they do to get themselves motivated is they connect with other people who are where they're at and where they want to go. So that I feel that's really important. Another thing I like to do to keep myself motivated is just keep track of my goals and where I'm at and how far I'm progressing. So what I like to do with goals and it's break them down. So I might have one big major goal, like this month I want to make $40,000 a month, or I want to get 1,000 new subscribers to my blog or something. So what I'll do is I'll chunk it down and I'll break it down. So okay, I want to get 1,000 subscribers in a month. Well, that means by 15 days I need to get half that, so 500, and then so half of that, so maybe after a week I have to get 250, and that keeps me motivated. Because I can see that when I do get even to those kind of midpoint milestones, it shows me that I'm heading in the right direction, that good things are happening. If I'm not there, it motivates me to catch up to where I should be by the end of the month. So it's kind of playing mind tricks on yourself to make that happen.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
Breathe. like literally just breathe. That's a huge thing, actually, and I'm not even kidding. Just, you know, sometimes, you know, you get heated or you get stressed, and that's totally fine. That's natural. That happens to everybody. It's just how you react to it determines what happens then. So I think, you know, a big thing is just to just relax and calm down a little bit and then step away from whatever's happening and just kind of, you know, come back into it later when you're kind of in a little cooler mood. I mean, I like to just breathe and relax and go on a walk, or, you know, if something's stressing me out with work, I go hang out with my son because he's always going to be someone to make me happy. Again, that the whole support group is very important, and, you know, doesn't matter what age they're at. I also like to think about what I've done and kind of, I guess for a second, just be proud of what I've accomplished. And you know, sometimes things might not be going the way I want them to, or things might, you know, look kind of down for a while, or I might feel down. And what I do is I just kind of remember how far I've come along and all the great things that I've done. Not because I'm, you know, trying to be cocky to myself or anything, but just because it helps me remember that I can do whatever it is I'm trying to do, or that I have done amazing things and I'm going to try to keep doing amazing things. Or if it's not me, I look at other people and try to get motivation from other people. So what I'll do is I'll watch a TED talk. So I'll go to TED.com and watch a really motivational speech about something that I'm interested in, or I'll go to a blog that I really enjoy and read a couple posts there and get inspired. And then I can, you know, really easily get back into what I was doing.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was definitely the layoff. Definitely, you know, when you're talking about the core, yeah, absolutely, the layoff was definitely to the core. I didn't know what I was going to do. Again, I had studied for 5 years for architecture, or 4 and a quarter, if you want to talk about it that way. And I thought I was going to dedicate my whole life to this, and I was working really hard for this industry, and it just kicked me out, and I didn't really understand what was going on. I know it was an economic thing, and they didn't have control over what was going on, but it just didn't sit right with me, and I didn't understand what was going on. Everything was out of control, and that's when I decided to take things into control. But again, that was really tough. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And, you know, that was part of the scary part was, you know, when I was working there, I knew what was going to happen. I knew that next week I was going into the office. I knew that I was going to get a paycheck at the end of the month. But when I got laid off, it was all a mystery. And the mystery is the scary part. But it can also be the exciting part. And that's kind of where I decided to say, okay, I could be scared and not getting anything done and just be worrisome the whole time, or I can take this as an opportunity to do something great. So that's when I decided to do everything I just talked about, start a business and take things under my own hands. And I'm really, again, I always say this, the layoff was the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through your challenges?
Is there an idea or principle? Yeah, I mean, it's just the idea of... let me see here. I'm trying to get you a good answer. It's something different than I've already said because I don't want to rehash everything I just said. But I kind of touched on it already. It's just the idea of not necessarily not knowing what's happening, but knowing that there could be something even better on the other side. And again, kind of flipping the switch and making it become an opportunity instead of something that just happened to me. And I think that's how we should always approach challenges is, you know, why are we doing what we're doing and what could be the possibility of these things that are happening to us? I mean, I like to think that everything happens for a reason. So when this happened, I think, you know, eventually after a week or two, I decided that it was for a good reason and that it was so that I could start things on my own. And like I said, that's what I did.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
I would say get uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is it's really easy to just go along with what everyone says you should be doing or what you feel that you should be doing because it's what makes you feel comfortable. But really the amazing things in life, from business to relationships, to just any life experience, it always happens sort of when you do something uncomfortable. Like say when you're going to ask a girl out, that's not comfortable. But it, you know, if they say yes, that makes you the happiest person in the world. And you do have to take those chances. So like asking a girl out, they might say no. And if they say no, yeah, it's going to hurt a little bit. But there are plenty of fish in the sea. And this is kind of I don't know what high school I'm speaking to you right now, but it's starting to turn into a relationship commencement speech. But I think you know what I mean. You know, it's just get uncomfortable, take risks, calculated risks, and do something amazing. You know, be bold, and you know, don't just be comfortable. And you know, the thing is, like, we're no longer in a kind of a society where you're just kind of working to work. You know, you can work for yourself. Even if you're working at a 9-to-5, you still should be thinking about yourself and what your end goal is and what would make you happy. I was in the 9-to-5 for a while, and I noticed people who would just work to work because they thought that that's what they had to do. They didn't know where they were going or what they were doing there. That's just what society and their kind of education, that's where they told them that they were supposed to go. But they had no idea where they were going. So what's that light at the end of the tunnel, or what kind of are you working towards? Why are you doing what you're doing? That should be something that you should always be thinking about. You should just write down what it is you want out of life and what would make you happy, and tack that up on your wall next to your office, or tack that up, you know, put it in your binder or whatever, just and have that be the motivating factor behind everything you do and why you do what you do, whether it's starting your own business or working 9-to-5. Just keeping that end goal in mind and working toward it and taking big leaps and bounds toward it instead of just going day by day and being comfortable with yourself.
Looking back, being part of the marching band may have been a good thing for you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. In so many ways. I mean, just the leadership aspect of it, the ability to really understand the importance of relationships, especially when you're trying to, you know, especially my second and third year when I was actually teaching people how to do things, not only people who were, you know, for, like I was section leader of the trumpet section, I wasn't only teaching the freshmen that came in from from the new year, but I was also teaching the third and fourth and fifth years who were there too. So I had to really understand how to get into people's, you know, good sides and how to get them to trust me and how to become an authority figure and how to almost kind of build a tribe, I guess you could say. That's a kind of internet business lingo that comes from Seth Godin, is building that tribe of people who are there for you and who will follow you, who trust you, who will be there and share your information and do everything they can to help you, because you're their leader. They're the leader of their tribe. And so that's something important I learned from Marjorie. And also the whole just the idea of time management. The ban was a huge time commitment, and it was always random. But that was something I learned a lot about, and just managing not only time but just myself and motivating myself to actually do things that were difficult. Because marching band. Oh, how hard is a marching band? It's pretty hard sometimes, and a lot of times I didn't want to do what we were required to do. But again, thinking about the end goal and the performances and making the crowd happy, that's really what it was all about, and that really helped. Motivate me and teach me just a lot of things that I've learned and applied throughout the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. And the balance between work and play. So not only were you working on your architecture, but you got to play in the band.
Yeah, absolutely.
My last question to help me get better at this process. Is there a question I didn't ask that I should have, or something you wanted to say but haven't?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, honestly, I think you hit on everything that I expected you to hit. I mean, I didn't. I really actually there are more questions that I there are more question unique questions that I've gotten out of this interview than any other interview I've gotten. Mostly people ask the same questions, but when you start talking about family and education and my background, it's really interesting. So I think you did a really, really good job. And if I can think of anything, I'll definitely let you know, because I want to help you improve. But I think it was really good. I think if there was one comment, if you don't mind, is maybe you could follow up with some of the answers, and dig deeper if you wanted to, instead of just moving from question to question. I mean, it was fine, but you could extract more information about one of the questions by just going deeper based on what their answer is, if you want to.
So, Pat, is there a particular question I asked that you would like me to go deeper on?
See, that you're doing it right now, and that's great. maybe with what happened with the online business or stuff about how I feel about spending time with my family all day, or how I can get more work done in less time because of my schedule and how I want to spend time with my family. I mean, a lot of time management questions come up and how I get so much done in so little time, which I don't think we touched on very much. So in response to those questions, how do I get so much done in so little time to make sure that I do have time for all the things I want to do? Really, it's about learning the processes and systems and trying to, it's hard to earn hours of time in chunks. But you can really get good at things like answering emails quickly or other systems of, if I'm writing a blog post, I know to do this, this, and this really quickly, or I have tools that do all these things for me super fast so that I don't have to do the repetitive stuff that I do over and over again each time. I have tools that help me do that. So for example, I respond to a lot of emails. So I have a tool called Text Expander, which allows me to just type in four or five keys on my keyboard that I know, and then it pastes in a whole essay worth of an answer that responds to a certain question that I get all the time. So that helps save a lot of time as well. And also making sure that from a health standpoint, that I'm healthy, so that I eat well and then I work out, because that directly is proportionate to how focused I am when I work, which is also directly proportionate to the results that I get. Because if I'm not focused, I don't get results. And so that all comes down to how healthy I am and how good I feel while I'm working. So those are other tactics that I use to make sure that I get more done in less time. And also just getting rid of the distractions like Facebook and Twitter. They're amazing and they do help for business as well. But when I have a task, I need to do just that task. So I shut everything else down and just focus on that until it's done.
I want to thank Pat Flynn for joining me today. Thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.